This is Dee Blick. Welcome to Lead Well, Live Well for UK Health Radio. Hello and a warm welcome to Lead Well, Live Well with me, your host, Dee Blick. Now we're broadcasting on UK Health Radio, the world's biggest talk health radio station. Thank you for joining me. It's lovely to have your company. Now, my guest on today's show is a woman that I'm yet to meet in real life. But every time we've spoken, we've hit it off like two old friends. Right from the very first encounter when she messaged me to say she had enjoyed my podcast with Emma Ellis, who was one of my previous guests. The more we chatted, the more I really loved and appreciated her spirit and her openness, not to mention what she has achieved in an incredible career. And I could also see that she had a story well worth sharing on my show. The minute she mentioned imposter syndrome, you'll understand why. I was hooked. So welcome to today's show, Claire Mellon.
Thanks so much, Dee. It's so lovely to be here with you.
It's lovely to be here with you too, Claire. And before we talk about your business and the lessons that you have learned as a marketer, I really appreciated what you shared in our pre-interview chat, and I'm going to quote you. I am now doing something where I can be me, authentically me. What do you mean by this?
I think for me, I feel like I can now really breathe. I can use my voice and I can build and develop both my personal brand and what I'm doing professionally in a way that is based on my values and in a way that really works for me and where I can share my voice and share views. And I think a lot of this comes from, you know, I was very lucky. I had some amazing roles in huge global brands, but it was a very corporate environment. And sometimes in those environments, you can't necessarily be yourself and you end up being molded into what they need you to be, which I completely understand. Especially, you know, as you know, being, you know, a fellow, it, you know, brand is everything. And if you're not out there in the mold they need, then that can, you know, have serious consequences for a brand. But I found that it maybe reduced my voice. You know, it meant that, for instance, how I came across on LinkedIn was perhaps not authentically me. And over time, it meant that my voice started to become smaller. I know we're going to touch on imposter syndrome later, but then you add that into the mix, a few roles that probably weren't really great for me in terms of environment. And that voice starts to get smaller and smaller. And I had times when I looked at myself, I don't really recognize myself. I don't feel like the real Claire is coming out. And as I removed myself, I guess, from that corporate life, went into a period of reconnecting with me, my values and my purpose as well, which is really important, started to find a community of like-minded people. I felt I was able to actually realize that being me was absolutely fine. And it was fine sometimes to be vulnerable. It was fine to, you know, share experiences, good and bad. And that sometimes you do make mistakes with things, because who doesn't? You know, that's authentic. No one's perfect. But I put myself in a place for too long thinking I had to be perfect.
Yeah, I identify so much with that when you're talking about a corporate environment, because as a young woman, I was a graduate trainee in a huge insurance company, and the training was marvelous, but it was very much cookie cutter, and you couldn't be too creative because there was somebody else doing that job. Your role was very clearly defined and you didn't step outside of it, which I think I've always said, there's a point at which a comfort blanket, i.e. knowing what you're going into, being kept in your channel, it becomes a straitjacket. And that's how I felt working in corporate life. And that was really one of the reasons why I wanted to start my own business, because then I can create my own comfort blankets. I can go as far as I want to go. So I really identified when you shared that. And I want to now really ask you a bit, because I'm fascinated that you spent some time working in advertising agencies, and I used to love working with the advertising agencies. They were always a bit zany. They were always far out there with their creativity. I loved the way they dressed, the way they spoke, and the lunches were absolutely exhilarating. And you were on, I was on the client side. You spent time working in advertising. Was it like Mad Men? You know, tell me what it taught you. Was it fear-inducing? Was it exhilarating? Or, as I would hazard a guess, a heady mix of everything?
A heady mix of everything. It was very intense, very exciting. Like you, I was on a graduate scheme in a construction-based company in Cambridgeshire. So to go to advertising agencies in London, and I spent time both in a digital agency and then went more traditional press. So it was a really heady time, quite intimidating. That time I was 23 when I first went into an advertising agency, thought I perhaps knew more than I did. It was an incredibly grounding experience, to the point that actually I would say anybody starting out in marketing, or actually anyone at any point in marketing, if you get a chance to work with an agency environment, it's incredible. You know, it taught me how to multitask. It taught me how to give feedback but also receive feedback in a constructive way. It taught me time management, an incredible lesson about don't ever overpromise, and especially not on behalf of somebody else, which in marketing, I'm glad I learned that lesson quite early on in my career. And it was just an incredible experience. And also from a marketing perspective, it allowed me to really be curious about what drove consumer behavior. Yeah. It allowed me to really get into the depths of briefing, of taking in some cases loads and loads and loads of documents, distilling it down into one briefing document, which had key messages, unique selling points, and make sure that that was good enough quality so that the creative team instantly understood what I was trying to say. So it was just an incredible, incredible experience.
I think that when I look at advertising agencies, I think you either end up leaving or you end up running them, because I could see the people that I worked with, how they were getting burned out. And I think as well, the one thing that working in an agency teaches you is emotional intelligence, because you're having to hopefully navigate reasonable clients, but not every client. I know in my team, I was always really kind to the agency, the guys that I work with, but some of the bosses could be really quite barbed, quite critical, or the issue feedback. I remember in one meeting, one of the directors just saying, I don't like it. And the agency had put forward these fabulous creatives. And I was sitting there thinking, this is mind blowing. And the boss was in quite a bullish mood, and he was like, I don't like it. And I was thinking, these people have probably worked to God knows what hour to pull this creative work together, and you're now decimating it with that ubiquitous, I don't like it. So I would imagine that, did you get to a point with it where you just thought, you know what, I've really given as much as I can in this particular career, it's time for me now to move on?
I did. And I didn't feel, going back to the authentic point, I didn't feel that it was really me. I felt that it was something I'd always wanted to do. I was thrilled that I did it. I got as much as I could from it as quickly as I could. But I knew that that agency sort of environment, which can actually be quite toxic at times, you know, it can. It is a very dog-eat-dog world. There's an awful lot of people that want to be in advertising and not a huge amount of jobs. And interestingly, completely different from the corporate environment, the agency environment, in terms of how a lot of them are managed, it is a very much, it's their way or the highway.
Yeah.
You know, you have to fit in, you have to fit into that. And if you don't perform, you know, very, very quickly. There's not a lot of put arm around you, you know, because they don't have time. You know, these are huge, huge client accounts. So after a few years, I thought, actually, I want to take what I've learned and put that into different marketing roles. But I just felt I was more suited at the time to that more corporate environment, and thought I would get more exposure, you know. And I was young and I was hungry and I was very driven, and I wanted the job titles and I wanted the office and I wanted the travel. And I sort of had that as a marker of success in my own head. You know, if I get that job before I'm 30, I've made it. And I did it, and I did make it. And then I remember sat sitting there thinking, it's not actually that great.
I understand that completely. And I think it's often we're brought up in this channel of thinking that, great, we've got the symbols of success. And they only last for so long before we can feel quite empty in our heart. And I think what you're saying there about that desire to be within a role where you were able to authentically express yourself and not to have these artificial deadlines and constraints, which can be really flipping horrible when you're certainly in the field of hard edge marketing. I was in direct marketing, and that was so deadline driven that sometimes you'd be working till the early hours. And that was on me, on the client side. And I think there's only so much of you that can give yourself to that role before you start to look beyond that signpost and think there's got to be something better out there. Now, don't go away. We're coming up to our very first break. And after the break, I'm going to be talking to Claire about that good old imposter syndrome.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick, and I've got the lovely Claire Mellon in the studio today. And I think there's rarely a show goes by, Claire, when I don't rake out of my trusty cupboard imposter syndrome. And I think increasingly people are coming to me and chatting about it. But you've also talked openly about having imposter syndrome. And I think you said you have the fear of being seen to fail. And I'd love it if you could share more about this.
Yeah, that's been there for quite a long time, that fear of failure. I mean, I can remember something as simple as taking my driving test. I didn't want anybody to know. The idea of having to tell people that I'd failed terrified me. So exams were my worst nightmare. I loved coursework, hated exams, because everyone knew that I was taking the exam. And I think it linked into perfectionism. Feeling like I always had to be the absolute best I could be. And that then started to go into imposter syndrome. And if I think back over my life, I think there were peaks of it and there were definitely troughs of it.
Yeah.
And as I got older, I found the imposter syndrome to be worse. And I think it was almost layered. I think it's as you get experiences which are super positive and they shape you and you can see silver linings in everything. But also if you're having negative experiences or you're burning out or you're shattered, it layers and layers and layers. And that annoying little voice that I call it, that just sits there, is just constantly in your ear. And I found I didn't realize I was doing it until I actually spent some time reflecting the negative self-talk. And interestingly, if I think back, you know, to that example of the driving test, I was instantly putting myself in a negative headspace because I was saying, you're going to fail because you're scared of telling someone, so you are going to fail. And it was that negative self-talk. And I still catch myself doing it now. I don't think it's something, I think if people say, no, I don't have it and I never do any self-criticism, I don't know how much I believe them. Or if they do, I want to know how you do it because it is really hard. And that has been, I think, the biggest shift for me is being aware when I'm doing that negative self-talk. And I was very late to the party with the chimp paradox, but I found that fascinating because I started to recognize in myself these shifts. And it talks about gremlins and goblins and the chimp. And I thought, well, no wonder I'm feeling like this because I've got everything going on in my head and I don't know which one's talking to which. And it's all noise. And that's allowed me to reflect and understand about how to change that internal dialogue. But it's a horrible thing, imposter syndrome. It's horrible.
It is. And gosh, when I was listening to you then, it was almost like hearing myself talking to me. It was so uncanny, even giving the example of your driving test. And I can remember being so sure I would fail that not wanting people to know about it. It was the same with my degree. I was so sure that I'd fail my degree that even when I got my degree, I've shared on the show before that I had a year of dreaming that I hadn't got my degree. It was almost like my dreams were then saying to me. And it fascinates me in a way. And I think I'm like you now where I can stand back and look at it and I can be like, what's going on here? I love the chimp paradox too. I'm reading that at the moment amongst about another million books. But I think it's so important as we get older that it's to be, for me as well, it's about being kinder to myself now that when I go down that well-travelled route, it's like, come on now, let's. And I challenge myself by saying, let's look at the truth. The truth is that you're not going to spectacular crash and burn in an interview. You're not going to, my big thing is public speaking. I'm a professional speaker. You know, you're not going to lose your thread on the stage. But if you do, it doesn't matter. And I've learned to take the sting out of all of that now. But we certainly seem to have to go through this ritual of punishing ourselves to get to the stage where we think enough, it's time, whether we find the solution in a book or whether we find it through being kindness and self-love. So when I hear it, there are so many talented, I'd say women in the main, I've spoken to a few guys that talk about imposter syndrome, but it does seem to be something with high-performing women that no amount of success quells it. It's the point at which we learn to love ourselves and be happy with ourselves. It's at that point that we can start to almost, it's like a healing process, I think, from flipping imposter syndrome. But I want to just take you on a bit of a journey now, because you went through a period where you suffered, and understandably so, you suffered mentally because you lost both parents in short succession and you had long COVID. I mean, that is horrendous. How did you get through all of that?
It was a hugely significantly challenging time. I lost my father in 2018, almost a year to the day I lost my mother. Then that was just before COVID. So then we went straight headlong into the COVID period. And then I was diagnosed with long COVID in the August of that year. And the two hardest things about this, the first thing which actually really surprised me was the loss of identity. So I really struggled with the loss of identity of being a daughter. My father particularly had been ill for many, many years. So I had almost sort of developed into a bit of a caring role in a way. I was an only child as well. So I always felt an awful lot of pressure on that I was an only child. And I sort of had this inevitability that when, you know, the worst thing was going to happen, it was going to be really tough. So I had that self-awareness of it, but I didn't really realize the loss of identity. You know, overnight I was like, well, I'm not a daughter anymore. I don't really know how to do with this. And then the long COVID, that just stripped my identity away. So you layer onto that the complicated grief, which is very different for everyone and very complicated. And it's very different. I was grieving for my father and my mother, but then them both together. I was grieving for the person that I had been before long COVID. I was grieving for the person I didn't think I could be in the future. So you can imagine it was a perfect storm of grief, of loss of identity. So it really wasn't easy, but looking back, it's shaped me incredibly into how I want to live going forward, because it forced me to stop. You know, long COVID, I almost didn't leave the house for a couple of years. The fatigue was so bad. I developed awful symptoms around food allergies, histamine allergies, and it was every day something different. was being thrown at me with it. So it made me stop and learn what rest is. I thought before that rest was binging on Netflix or scrolling on my phone, but pure rest is, no, you stop. And I had to reconnect and find myself again. And I did that a lot through meditation, reconnecting with nature and taking small steps, because they were the only steps I could take. You know, I couldn't just decide one day, right, today's the day, I'm going to start exercising, I'm going to eat healthily, I'm going to read that book and life's going to be great. Because I knew I'd take two steps forward and then it felt like I was taking 20 back, because that's just what it was. You never knew day to day what you were going to deal with. So it was really hard, but it's given me perspective and it's helped me reassess what matters and who matters. And it forced me to really change a lot of aspects of my life.
Gosh, I really can understand that when you're in the pit of something. It's interesting, I was chatting to the founder of UK Health Radio, I interviewed him today, and we were talking about how sometimes life brings you to the absolute bottom point, your rock bottom, your basement, whatever you call it. And you're so right about the importance of taking small incremental steps, but not being too demanding of progress, just being happy that there is progress. And excuse me, you were sharing about meditation, and meditation really saved me when I was hit with, I've got quite an aggressive form of tinnitus, which affects my hearing. So I always say I've got generators and snakes in my head. And the gift today is I'm not aware of it. It's there, like it's making a racket now. But I've learned to completely divorce from it and not to attach any feeling of fear or anger. And it was meditation that did that. And I couldn't believe how something so flipping simple as meditation for chronic ill health could dig me out of that pit that I had fallen into. And it took me probably about a year and a half, 2 years to get through the other side of it, because like you, I'd have days where I think, wow, it's wonderful, I'm in control, I'm this, you know, serene being. Then I have days where everything fell apart. But it's just so important that we get ourselves on that road to progress, which it sounds like you did. And I'm looking at the time and we're coming up to our second break, so don't go anywhere, because after the break I'm going to be talking to Claire about her new business, Cohesion Financial Solutions, and how she's really making her mark as an empathetic and caring and authentic business leader.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick, and the lovely Claire Mellon. Now, Claire, you've got this new business, Cohesion Financial Solutions. I mean, firstly, congratulations on starting a new business. How awesome is that? So tell me your why and tell me your what. So why did you start it and what are you doing?
Oh, I'm so excited to be able to talk to you about Cohesion. So Cohesion launched on the 6th of January this year. It's my my actual partner in real life, as I always say, Paul and I. We've co-founded it together. We've worked with each other on and off for about 16 years, so we know each other inside out. Between us, we've got almost 50 years experience in financial services, which is terrifying. And we wanted to create a firm that was values-led, that was purpose-led, and at its heart, it's all about people, you know, and that to us is so important. So we support individuals, families, businesses and business owners through things like financial planning, mortgages, wills, LPAs, business solutions, protection, you know, the whole holistic approach. And for us, it's about building long-term relationships. It's about helping people navigate life and the transitions and the roller coaster. And creating a space where they feel seen, they feel heard, and where we're removing the overwhelm and removing the vulnerability that talking about anything to do with money inevitably creates, by empowering and educating them and just bringing clarity to the whole process. So it's really, really exciting. And it's, when we talk back about the authenticity, it doesn't feel like work. You know, there's a real spark and a fire, and I feel like that voice has come back. I'm a, you know, the steering group of Women's Wealth Alliance, which is amazing. Paul's a chartered wealth manager. So between us, we feel like through Cohesion, we can actually create lasting impact, not only for the clients, but for community and also for the profession which we're in, start to change standards, start to change how we talk about money to people and how we give advice. So it's really exciting.
I love it when you say about heart. I still work with clients now, and I will only work with a business if it's a heart-led business. We absolutely can be focused on profit, but never at the expense of purpose and passion. And I always believe, as a businesswoman, that I've always led with passion and purpose and genuinely caring. Then the money comes afterwards. But I've got to ask you, as a marketer, because we're both fellows of the Chartered Institute of Marketing, what was your involvement in the creation of your visual brand and putting the brand identity together for Cohesion?
I was with it every step of the minute. So it was funny. I did work with an agency who were wonderful, who were able to bring my vision live. But in terms of all the work myself on what do I want to stand for, how do I want that to come across in terms of the colours, in terms of the font, in terms of, you know, the tone, you know, that was very much me. I did all the, wrote all the content myself for the website. You know, everything comes very much from me, obviously through with a Cohesion tone of voice overlay. But to work on something strategically and tactically that you know is your own business was so refreshing, so exciting, but also terrifying. When we pressed the button to go live on the website, I was almost hiding under the desk because I thought, God, if this doesn't land, yeah. If people say, we don't really understand what it is you're trying to say, I've only got one person to blame, and that was very much me.
Oh.
But it's wonderful to have all those years of experience of being a marketer, but also having a real passion for the profession of, you know, within financial services, and being very clear vision on what we want the brand to be and how we want that to serve people and what that consistency looks like, which is why I think it doesn't feel like work. You know, it's as pleasurable working on the business as it is in the business.
That's nice. I love that. Mm. And I think that's so important, isn't it? I'm exactly the same as you. And when you were sharing about the agency, the question that popped into my mind, what was it like being on the client side? Because you've worked extensively on the agency side. How did it feel to be on the client side?
I really enjoy it because I understand their language and I can brief them. And I think the agency in particular, I think, love working with me because I can. It's almost like that you're getting rid of that middleman, that middle layer of being a client, because they can talk to me in their language. I know what they want. And I'm also very sympathetic. So if something's not quite right, we'll work it through. And I'll be like, okay, well, was it something to do with my brief that wasn't quite right? And, you know, having been in those agencies where I've seen people reduced to tears,
yes,
over,
yes,
feedback, I always swore I would never be that person. So it created a lot of empathy with the process. So I think it put me in a great position to be able to really articulate what it was that I wanted. And I think when you find an agency that you work really well with, keep hold of them and nourish that relationship and cherish it, because they become, well, they should be an extension of you. It's like they're sitting right here by me and you get to know each other really well. And if you put time into that relationship, it absolutely speaks volumes and you can see it shine through brands that way.
Yeah. I have that tie. I work with, I've got a trusted team of like web guys and copywriters and designers, and I really love working with them. And they, I give, probably like you, I give a very thorough and clear written brief, followed up by a face-to-face meeting. And they're always saying, we've never had briefs like this, because most businesses do not know how to articulate their vision for their brand. They just tend to say things like, I don't like green, I like black, or I don't like purple. And so I'm with you on that. In the, there's a joy in working with a team of people and knowing that each one of you is as valuable as the other in delivering fundamentally what the client wants. Now, I've got to ask you, you've got this new business, which is all exciting. You've sorted your brand out. You're led by your heart, by wanting to do right by clients. Tell me what your ambitions are for this new business, because we all have that, don't we? We start out, I say small, because we are when we start out small, unless we're given a whole wodge of clients. But where would you like to see Cohesion in a few years' time? What are your ambitions?
So we want to build something that genuinely changes people's lives and that also creates lasting impact and helps to raise standards and leaves a legacy. You know, that's for us. And to keep very true to the values, you know, you mentioned about purpose and profit. They can absolutely live together. You don't have to choose one over the other. And we want to stay very true to that. And, you know, we've got all the qualifications, we've got all of the experience, but for us, success is now that every single person that comes through our door, whether they're a client, whether they're somebody, you know, a young learner or somebody within a school that we're teaching financial literacy to, whether it's just somebody on the street that comes in and says, do you know what? I don't know if I need a pension. Can we have a chat? Whatever it is, you know, whether it's community that we, or charities we're dealing with, I want everyone to feel seen, heard, understood and empowered. And that's really, really important. And that comes down to the trust, to the credibility. And I think not taking just easy money. And I think it's very easy in business to pick off, you know, the perfect clients that are perhaps going to give you the revenue. You know, for us, it's not about that at all. And I think staying true to those values and actually really making a difference and that lasting impact for us is, you know, a huge measure of success.
I like that. And as I listen to you, because we've spoken a few times now, something that I have always done, well, for many years, is I have carved a name for myself for public speaking. So I speak at very big events and it's really helped me with book sales. It's helped me in the time when I was taking on work. And you're obviously a really smart, hugely articulate, compassionate woman. And you've got this incredible life story, this experience of being in advertising, the sharp end at marketing, coming through long COVID. Do you see yourself occupying those sorts of platforms where you're a keynote speaker? It could be at an event that's held by your peers or a business event. Do you have that vision? Because I can certainly see that for you.
It's funny, if you'd asked me a year ago, the annoying voice would have got really loud and said, no, don't be so ridiculous, absolutely not, hide away in a corner. But one of the best things I did is I came off LinkedIn completely. About 18 months ago, I came off and I rebuilt it. I rebuilt my community on it. I made sure that my feed was full of people that inspired me, full of events that inspired me. And that's allowed me to start to create a platform. So I was invited to be on the steering group of Women's Wealth Alliance. You know, I was asked a few weeks ago to sit on a round table talking about how we can improve financial outcomes for women, both in the industry and as clients. I've been asked in a couple of weeks to sit on an industry social media event where, as a practitioner, I'm helping, you know, financial advisors understand about the importance of how social media So all of these things, but that's happening organically, you know, the opportunities to sit and talk with you today, it's taught me a huge lesson that actually, if you are authentic and you have the right community around you and you are feeding yourself with positivity and content that feels, that resonates, and you're going to the same events, these opportunities can come up. And I would love nothing more to use my platform to speak about topics that I think are really, really important for the industry and for the profession, and to be honest, just for society.
Yeah, I listened to you, and it makes me think. I interviewed, he's actually a client of mine, on my show a few weeks ago, a chap called Richard Betts. And I held an event recently and I asked him to be a keynote speaker at it. And he is the most amazing motivational speaker. And it's not just that he's a great speaker, his backstory is compelling. And whenever I'm looking for a speaker, because invariably now I'm the one that's going out and sussing out great speakers, it's their story. And I'm always impressed when they've got a gutsy story of how they overcome, like, for example, losing your parents and getting long COVID. That the horrors of that and the visceral impact it will have had on you mentally, physically and spiritually is just not to be, you know, underestimated. It's huge. And so for me, as somebody who looks for speakers, I'm always really curious about what's brought that person to the point where they are today. And inevitably, they've got a war story. They've got something that's happened to them and they've got through it. They've got out the other side. And that's something that when I was listening to you, I thought, gosh, yeah, I mean, you could be not just a speaker at an industry event. I could really see how you're in your niche when you're with your peers. But that might be something for you to put on your never say never list about actually being at an event where you can motivate others. And it was the same with Richard. He was a fire commander. He's a mountain guide. And then he's got his own IT business. Now, if you just look at the IT business, you'd say, oh, well, he can talk to his peers. But then you look at his backstory and you're like, gosh, there's some real rubies in the rubble there that we can work with. And so it always fascinates me when I'm talking to talented people that the things they would never think were important when, for example, pitching for media coverage or speaking engagements, this is your stock. This is like your positive toolkit, if you like, where you're able to bring it forth. But I was thinking we're moving steadily towards the end of the show, and I wanted you to share a motivational quote with me and tell me why. Why is this your quote?
So my quote is actually a lyric. So I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan. Both Paul and I are, and we have been to many concerts together and had many giggles and many tears watching him and hearing him. And I, all through my life, have found music to be very empowering. And I can actually remember more lyrics than I ever can quotes in a book. I think it's just the way my brain is wired. And I find it, music, very emotional. It can really change my mood, you know, very, very quickly. And yeah, I have a lot of memories. And he's got a song called Wrecking Ball. And there's a line in it that he repeats over quite a few times, saying, hard times come, hard times go. And when I've listened to that song over the last sort of 10 years, when I've been in really bad times, it's given me hope that, not in a flippant way, but sometimes when it's a hard time, you have to have the knowledge that it will get better. You might not believe it and you don't know how, but it will get better somehow. And, you know, after having gone through a really, really tough period and now launching Cohesion, and it feels like life is moving forward in a really lovely, positive, authentic way. I can remember listening to it as we drove into work on the day we launched, and we both just reached for each other's hand. I was in tears because it was like, you know, we've come through it and look what we're doing. And those hard times have gone, but actually, thank goodness for them. Because if it hadn't been for them, we wouldn't now have Cohesion.
Yeah, I think there is something about music that can move me more than anything in the world. It can either lift you into a absolutely heightened state of happiness or plunge you into, I can be in tears listening to music. I'm thinking, well, a few minutes ago, I was happy as Larry, we're on our bowling. And so I really understand. And I think you're the first guest on my show that's actually used a line from a song. And I think when I give out my briefing notes to my guests, I say your favorite quote could be something your granddad said or your grandma. It can be a line in a song. And so I love the fact that you chose the line from a song. And I love Bruce Springsteen. Was it Dancing in the Dark? I remember as a young woman having this, I was inexhaustible. I would dance to that song until I was blue in the face and singing it. And even now, when I have it on at home and I'm cooking, something gets burnt or I end up with something on my top from jigging around the kitchen to Bruce Springsteen. But Claire, what is your question for me?
So my question for you, so it's with your author hat on.
Okay, I've got it on now. I'm wearing it.
What has writing taught you about yourself that maybe has surprised you?
Gosh, what has writing taught me about myself? I think I always go with my top of mind answer. It's taught me that I'm perhaps smarter than I give myself credit for. I think it's also taught me that persistency, that I don't give up. It's almost like my writing has brought out the best in my character and I cannot deny it, whereas usually I go, oh, you're this, you're that. And then I think with writing, because I've been quite assiduous in learning how to be a good writer or how to write books, which is the biggest form of writing for me. So it's taught me a bit of self-respect, because I've spent a lifetime being able to tell myself all the things that I'm not. Whereas when I look at my books, they're actually in solid form. And I think, gosh, you wrote those. So you're not too bad. You're reasonably bright to be able to have written these books. And I think the thing about persistence is that I'd always branded myself as a bit of a flibbity gibbet where you flit from one thing to the other. And I thought, actually, I've done myself a disservice, because I know when I'm writing, I just don't give up. I don't get writer's block. I can write for 12 hours, barely prise myself away from the seat to make a drink. So, yeah, that's a great question. What has it taught me? I hope that that's an answer that makes sense to you.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's that, like you say, that persistence, that tenacity, is just grabbing hold of something that you want. And I think the fact that you don't get writer's block is incredible, because that shows, again, it comes back to authenticity. It's natural for you. It's not a subject you're forcing. And having read, especially your last book, I just think it's fantastic. Really inspirational.
That's really lovely. And well, sadly, Claire, that brings us to the end of your time on today's show. And so, you know, thank you for joining me. Thank you for being so honest and open. I have really loved every minute that I've spent with you today. It's just felt like that a conversation, which to me is the best show of all. So thank you for joining me today.
No, thank you so much. It's an honour. It really is.
Now, my lovely listeners, I want to share a few bits with you. Actually, I'm going to share something with you from a book that I bought recently, and it's called I Decided to Live as Me, How to Stop Comparing Yourself to Others So You Can Learn to Love Yourself. It's by a South Korean author called Kim Soo-hyun. Now, as you can imagine, I was immediately taken in by the title, I Decided to Live as Me. I thought, well, that's definitely something that's worthy of my further inspection. I got into the shop to buy scented candles, and I found myself for 15 minutes rooted to the spot reading this book before buying it. And that's always my way with a book. I always buy the book, but I'm so intrigued and excited by the spoils inside that I will literally be there for a good 15 minutes reading it. And I love this book. And what I wanted to do was read to you the first chapter. Now, your heart won't sink when I say first chapter. We're talking about just over a page. These are little themes throughout the book. So this one here jumped out at me. Do not be polite to those who are not polite to you. Right out of college, I did an internship. That first boss I had in my first job ever treated me like a servant. She bullied me, basically, asking me to move by 4 inches the monitor that was right in front of her, cursing me out for the smallest mistake. It was my first corporate job. With an offer of full-time employment on the line, I was torn of whether to stay or go. Every day on that job hammered home the fact that Homo internus was the lowest being on the corporate food chain. Several years after I finished the internship, I was lying in bed when I was suddenly consumed with rage by that memory. It was less her behaviour that I couldn't stand and more the fact that I just put up with it. It wasn't like she was all powerful, but I didn't say a word to her in my defence, and that just encouraged her to act worse. To those who are not kind to you, who do not respect you, don't bother being polite to them in return. Even in demeaning situations, you can at least hold on to some of your dignity. Even if we can't change a situation, we need to push back a little to protect our dignity from the worst kind of people. Because what gives bullies strength isn't their position, but the helpless politeness of the bullied. Thank you so much for joining me today. Stay tuned for more honest conversations with authentic leaders and great books that might just give you that oomph. Look after yourself, be kind to yourself, and as I always say, stand in your circle of power, arms open to the universe for all the great and good things that you are so deserving of. That's me, Dee Blick, sending you a big hug. You've been listening to Lead Well, Live Well on UK Health Radio.